You can go ahead. I started recording.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, you could have fucking counted it down again.
What I did! I did count it down. You were doing a wacky sound.
No, you did not.
I said 3, 2, 1, and then there was wacky sound.
No, there was not.
There was definitely a countdown.
I will kill you.
I technically don't have the recording of it because I do it before I record, but I will listen to the Hitbox recording where it does have it in there, and you will look like quite the silly billy.
It is time for a Q&A episode of Weekly Micro Recap, where Nick and Chris are professionals at podcast recording, and we never have any difficulty doing it whatsoever.
Yes. I know how to master my system. I've been doing it for almost 5 years now, and you think at this point I'd know when my streaming device is recognizing my microphone or not.
Oh, God. So we're here at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Valentine's Day, and it's time to answer some questions. But first, before we take questions from you guys, we are going to answer questions from each other. Chris, is this a poll question you put up, the question that you had for me?
No, I put this up just because I like to put a question to the fans, and I was like, well, it's Valentine's Day, why not ask a Valentine's Day-themed question?
I actually did answer this one, mostly because, you know, I have to answer in order to see the results of the poll.
Mm-hmm.
The question was, which leading lady would you most like a Valentine's Day date with? I'm not happy with my answer, because I chose Lucy. Because I thought, most of these girls are underage.
All right, well, here's the thing. To be completely fair, it's saying a date with them. You're not fucking these people. It is weird to assume that on the first date. Second of all, a lot of our listeners are young. They might be 18 years old. They might be 17 years old. In which case, a date with them is not weird. I put Robin in there, Nami in there, Lucy. All those characters are of age, by and far. I think Orihime might even be of age. Nah, I think she's still like a junior or like 17 probably, or so.
Yeah, she's late into high school. She'd be among the less creepy. Noelle kind of too, because they don't have high school.
Well, she's 15, I think. I thought they said she's 15.
I don't remember how old this issue was. But yeah, you know. I mean, so it's like, in terms of like compatible with my personality type, it would probably be actually one of the younger ones. But in terms of don't want to get arrested, it's one of the older ones. Because because really the only ones that are actually like old enough for this would be Lucy, Nami, and Robin, I think. Because even Kitora, I think, is not 18 yet.
No, I think she's like 17 or so, something like that.
She's close to around Osamu's age. So I thought, well, Nami would rob me blind. Robin would be really creepy, so I'll go with Lucy.
But she has so many hands.
See, now you're talking like you are going to have sex. What the?
I think Robin's maybe just one of those people who's like, oh, I give it up on the first date, even. Bam.
Why does she sound like that?
I don't know. I don't have a good Robin impersonation. Sue me.
Okay. So I chose Lucy because she would probably be the most normal to hang out with, assuming that Natsu didn't show up and ruin everything.
Yeah. So, there you go. I feel like we're going to find out a lot about our audience from this. I specifically did not make Chica an option for that very reason, though.
Right, yeah. He's like, oh, no, it's going to be totally innocent. Shut up. My question for you, Chris,
is
what do you think of the practice of giving non-romantic gifts to people, as in... You get Valentine's Day cards for everyone you know, basically. Or you get some chocolate for all the people close to you and not just loved ones and stuff.
I haven't heard of any... Like, I haven't done that since grade school, essentially, when, like, you were required, at least in our school, Catholic school, you had to have a Valentine's for everybody.
Right.
Which, I don't know, just always made it sad, because it was very, very clear that they'd spent as little time as possible online, so they're like, Chris, how do you spell it? Here you go. I had a box of Spider-Man ones, and you got the Mary Jane card. I'm like, aw. I don't see an issue with it necessarily. I don't know if I'd ever do it. I imagine when I get older, like, if I have kids and I have a daughter, I'd always want to make sure she got something for me on Valentine's Day, too, or my kids in general would.
Like, thanks for reminding me I'm single, Dad.
I'm like, you're four. Stop screaming at me. I'm just trying to do something nice.
Never gonna get none. Okay, go to your room.
And that sort of thing. And then, like, I don't know, like, because I don't get anything for my sister or my mom on Valentine's Day. I'll get my mom discount chocolates after Valentine's Day. She loves those. And I don't know, she doesn't really have a calendar anymore. I don't know if she knows what Valentine's Day is, so it might be the same thing, I guess.
I personally think that getting Valentine's Day gifts for people who aren't your, romantic interest are is kind of weird. I've never gotten used to receiving gifts from other people. Like, even, like, if my grandmother still sends me candy, it's still like, oh, this is kind of weird. Oh, well, free Skittles. But I don't know. So even, like, when my parents send me give me a card or something like that, it's still like, come on. I've got a girlfriend now. You can stop.
You know what, Nick? I'll let you know my answer to this question when I receive a gift on Valentine's Day.
Aww.
Even in the relationships I had, I didn't get anything on Valentine's Day. It was very strange.
Poor Chris.
I lived a charmed life, Nick.
Is that how you refer to that?
That's what I lie to tell myself to keep myself upbeat.
Okay. Well, good for you.
I think good for me. I'm pretty excited about the way things are going. So,
and did you have a question for me then?
I didn't, and then I was going to hopefully just take the one that you thought was a question for you and use that. But since I need a question now, are you excited to see Deadpool, Nick?
Actually, not really. I'm glad that it's doing well and that people are liking it. Because, you know, with the almost 10 years that people have been talking about how, oh, the character's been ruined and stuff, it is nice that, you know, the same company was able to turn things around and present a version of the character that people found not only acceptable, but really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm glad that that worked out, because, you know, I like comic book movies in general, and I don't like, you know, hearing about the ones that are bad, you know. It's like, well, we've ruined our chance to do this character for the next 7 years. You know, I have to wait until we decide to reboot it again in order to try it next time. You know, it's nice to have stuff, you know, to build on as opposed to stuff to start over with. Because they're never going to give a character up. They're just going to go back to it eventually.
Yeah.
They always go back to the well eventually.
Now, do you like Deadpool at all? Because here's the thing, I don't like Deadpool. I've never liked the character. I don't particularly find him amusing. I've never considered myself a fan of him. So I had very little expectations to be pleased going into the movie. But I don't know if you're like, I kind of like Deadpool.
I do kind of like him, but I've never read any Deadpool comics. Like, honestly, most of my exposure to him has just been through people talking about him online. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's amusing and stuff. But, you know, I don't have too much of a connection to the character.
Fair enough. Movie's not bad. I saw it. It's enjoyable. Solid.
Good.
Although they fucked up Colossus again.
Did he at least throw somebody?
I mean, he does look better than he does in any other movie. And the highlight of the movie for me is a quote-unquote fight that Deadpool has with Colossus. But it's just, they still can't let him win a confrontation. It's so annoying to me. And they fucked up his powers at one point, too, which irritated the shit out of me. But it's, like, somewhat of a spoiler to get into. So I won't dig too much into it. But it's still, overall, a very good movie. And I think they did a lot better with Colossus in this one than they have with any other X-Men. Like, they made him, like a super positive Russian, like, good guy. Like, make sure you eat breakfast before go out for battle. Breakfast, most important meal of day. You need protein to be big and strong.
So they made him Brom?
Basically. Very much on that same level. But
Santa Claus from Rise of the Guardians.
I'll take your word on that.
He was essentially a super positive Russian.
Oh, good for him. But yeah, exactly like Santa Claus.
Santa Colossus. There we go.
Santa Colossus. So all I guess we should start.
Yes, let's answer some questions that people actually sent into us, and maybe we'll actually be less than a month behind.
Yes. So this question is from December 5th. This is from...
Yes, Scott.
Yes. This is from Michael Hurt. He has a couple questions from us. Hey, Chris, rolling around at the speed of round T, Larios, and Nick, why am I the ruler of time because Kronos retired and could only pass the job to someone as sweet with as sweet as a beard as his? I have some questions for you. First question, what would be your favorite just totally random rant not related to any series or show at all and was just you guys bantering back and forth that you guys did? For example, I think mine would be Rocky tells Adonis Creed the plot of Rocky IV, which devolved into just singing Hearts on Fire and talking about shirtless robots.
It's kind of hard to answer this question because we've been doing the show for 5 years. Mm-hmm. But I do have, you know, some of my favorite, like, kind of character-related stuff, like alternate character interpretations that we have, like Caesar Clown talking about the Rocky movies, for example. I thought it was really great. What was it? Minato getting way too personal with Naruto about his sex life with Kushina. That's a good one. Mostly, like, I mean, I've got my favorite moments and stuff, but if you're talking about something that actually had no basis in a series we were talking about, then I think I actually have more difficulty talking about them, because it's easier for me to recall the ones that were related to our manga discussions in general.
I mean, I'm bad at remembering jokes we did from last week, essentially. I remember people used to say, like, what were your favorite Transmission Awesome moments? And then they'd list some of theirs that they liked, and I'd be like, I completely forgot we did that. That's hilarious. Like, I forget most of the jokes and things like that. But what I do remember and always liked was just the when the grand cooking tournament happened in Toriko, and just the one dude in Toriko who hates who's just like, I hate this! What is nothing else is on! They just completely dominated it.
That was good.
That was a pretty good. Question two. Since you only started doing the who is the best character in a week, and we'll see who the best character of the year is by the end, are there any characters you look back on in previous years of WMR that you think had a good year? Like, say, 2013 was the year of Sasuke or Naruto. Maybe that one is a bit wrong, but you get what I mean, right? So, do we ever think a character had a big year previously that maybe we didn't bring up?
I mean, we didn't actually end up naming, like, the character of the year when we talked about this because, you know, it was just more difficult to keep track of, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's there would have been certain moments, I'm sure, where we would be like, oh, yeah, it was really great. Sabo showed up, I think, would have showed up at the end of last year, or of the year before, rather, the end of 2014, I think. So that might have played a role in that. You know, maybe a certain villain would have, you know, really stood out to us, you know, like from One Piece. I don't know.
I feel like Osama would probably have gotten it from me from 2014. Because I think that was the year World Trigger had, like, the kind of the evasion arc ended. And that was, like, a big crux of it was his development. I think there was even, like, the press conference might have even been in that bit. So he had a really good year that year. And third question, I noticed you guys have been picking a lot on lately on Infamous Plant. What would you say he's so your favorite sort of punching bag on WMR or other related podcasts, or is there something else you enjoy ribbing on him more than him? Someone else you enjoy ribbing on more than him? No, he's just he's a friend of the show, and you know, we bust everybody's balls.
Mm-hmm.
If you listened to Transmission Awesome at any point in time, that was like the longest running theme is that I was just always a shitty person to everybody on the show. So it really just comes with one of the easiest jokes and the funnest jokes to make on a person. And he's British, which is already a slight against him. Being foreigns is so easy.
Yeah. It is difficult sometimes for people to pick up on this when friends are mean to each other, they have to realize that it's because we're friends, you know?
Mm. So yeah, there we go.
Okay, I will field the next question then from Andre Golden. Dear why the ruler of Get Your Game On, and transform and roll out tea. I love listening to your podcast and know how much you enjoy One Piece, so I wonder, what dubbed version of One Piece did you see first, the 4Kids dub or the Funimation dub? I believe it was 4Kids for both of us that we saw first.
Yeah, I watched the 4Kids dub.
I mean, it had the advantage of, one, coming first, and two, being on television. So.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've actually seen much of the Funimation dub, actually. I think I know I've seen the movies that have used a couple of their voices in it, but I don't know if I've actually seen many episodes that use the Funimation dub.
I don't think I've ever seen a full Funimation dub episode, no.
I know that aired briefly on Toonami for a bit. I don't know if it still does or not, but... Yeah, outside of that, I watched a lot more of the 4Kids dub, honestly.
Well, you said, you know, it was the thing that got you back into One Piece after you kind of drifted away from it.
So. Yeah, so, I mean, I still have a fond appreciation for the dub, 4Kids dub. I recognize it's awful in many, many ways, but, yeah, One Piece was good enough, I guess, to translate through all the bad censorship issues and everything like that.
Yeah. Rest up.
From the Dark Mite. Hello, Rolo Honey Mustard Mega Love, and Why Prince of All Pop-Tarts.
Damn right.
After listening to your great December Q&A, I was slightly disappointed you weren't able to get to my question. This is my fault because I procrastinated until the month of the end of November to send my email after you've been flooded with so many earlier in the month. The reason I bring this up is because in the regular WMR podcast you did right after the Q&A, you inadvertently answered my Food Wars question. As such, I felt that I should send something new for you to answer. For Chris... Have you read the latest volume of Food Wars, Volume 9, yet? I ask because it's a quarterfinal cooking match has a really cool callback to one of your favorite series. Yes, I have read it, and I know the point you're talking about, the match between Megumi and Kurokiba, has the two of them both gaining stands for a moment and having like a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure-esque battle for a hot moment. It's pretty funny and cool. I love seeing that. And for the both of us, who would win in a fight, Batman or Aizen? Before we get into the discussion, here are some conditions. I've attached a picture to the email that shows Batman sitting upon a glowing chair and proclaiming himself to be a god. Yes, he is literally one in the Justice League right now. It's Bat-God versus Aizen, who is essentially a god and is also stuck in a chair, so god versus god and chair versus chair. There are rules to this, apparently.
Yeah.
Batman, while he sits in the Mobius chair, is the new god of knowledge. That means while he's on the chair, he has access to all knowledge and information in the multiverse. He can travel to any world in the multiverse using his chair. He's still Batman. And Aizen is stuck to his chair and still Aizen.
It depends. I mean, you've thrown us for a bit of a loop by referencing events in DC Comics that we are unfamiliar with. If literally all of Batman's powers that he gains are just access to knowledge and information and being able to travel, then I don't know. I mean, theoretically, he could use the chair to travel to some point in the multiverse that Aizen could not reach, and therefore be like, nah. But if they're going to try to beat each other in combat, if Batman's stuck to a chair, he's not going to be able to do as much. Like, he's not going to actually be able to put the knowledge to as much use as Aizen can, because, you know, he'll just, you know, kill him with his Kido, basically. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I sort of feel like I need to know more about Batman's throne, essentially.
In my opinion, I don't care who wins. I hate these side fights. The fight, any fight between two omnipotent beings feels unnecessary for me because I feel like it doesn't make sense anyway. And I feel like it's one of those fights that's just going to devolve between two people sitting in a chair and effects happen around them, which seems really boring to watch. I don't know who would win between them. They're both broken-ass characters, but I guess if Batman has power of multiverses, maybe that gives him an edge since Aizen's is just a sensory control. That is still broken as shit, but, I mean, I guess the ability to transfer between different realities gives you some sort of advantage. I don't think I'd want to see that fight anyway.
Alright. Next up from Satellite of Love. Dear Y-Ruler of Hating Bleach and Rollout T. Whether or not you watch the My Hero Academy anime or not, what is the worst/funniest original ending that Studio Bones could come up with? I would go with Deku defeating All for One by having all of Class A eating his hair and getting One for All, and then doing a Soul Eater-style all-out attack. Then All Might turns out to be the real bad guy. Then it'll end on a cliffhanger that won't be addressed again until My Hero Academy Brotherhood coming 2023. I do like that that idea. That is amazing, yes. The worst thing they could come up with is everyone dying. That's my nomination.
I'll try to make it a more slightly grounded idea and say that if it ended, let's assume it gets through the tournament, the school festival, mm-hmm. and maybe ends right around the time, I think the anime was announced around the time of the whole, like, Stain fight. Like, let's say they get through that, they do the thing with Stain, and then they want to end it, so they have Deku have a fight against Shigaraki, and then Stain shows up to help Deku as now a new hero. I'd be like, this sucks. So that would be like my, like, oh god. No mas.
Second question. Also, would you guys consider doing one of these Sailor Moon movies for a movie commentary? This would actually... Two of those three, I think, would be great suggestions for it. Actually, all three of them really have stuff to offer, because one is just super awful. One is actually quite good. And one features Bomb Bomb Babies. So...
Bomb Bomb Babies?
Well, you'll see if we ever watch the movie.
Okay.
So, well, I don't think we can go wrong with any of the three movies. So, yeah, that actually sounds good. We'll take that into consideration. Thank you.
Very good. Two questions here from Joshua-san. Dear Nick and Chris, I have two questions for you. One, what is the moment or arc in manga that got you to love and read manga, or even just your favorite manga?
Well, I think I've mentioned this before. The moment in One Piece that convinced me that I wanted to stick with it and read all the way through was when they were on in Little Garden, and Luffy got eaten by a Brontosaurus for some reason. But before he was swallowed, one of the giants who was fighting inadvertently chopped its head off, and so he popped out of the end of its neck going, eh? And I was like, that is fucking hilarious. I love this manga. In terms of what got me to start reading manga in general, I started off by watching the Bleach anime, and then I basically got to the end of what was available through the anime, and I decided to then catch up on the manga. I don't know if it was any particular one moment in Bleach, so much as, like, oh, you know, I was hooked on the series in general. And that was so long ago, I don't remember what the heck got me to actually start liking Bleach, really.
Yeah, I mean, it may have just been sort of the time, too, or people you knew. Because I know I got into Bleach basically just because my friend Frank did. He read Bleach, told me about it, and I picked up the volumes from that and just went from there. One Piece, the moment that got me into it was really Alabasta, because I had a weird method of reading through One Piece, of, like, experiencing it. Like, I read the first four volumes at one point, then saw the Arlong Park fights in the 4Kids dub. Then I think I started reading the manga at the point of Alabasta, went forward up until Water 7, then I went back and was slowly reading through the East Blue arc, and then eventually I got to Drum Island and the Little Garden. Like, for a very long time, there was a break where I was talking about, like, you know, like Thriller Bark, and I still had never read through Thriller or Little Garden and things like that. Like, I just hadn't gotten to them. That's because when I got into One Piece, the 4Kids dub had just done the Arlong Park fight stuff. The manga hadn't even gotten to that point yet in America. Like, they hadn't translated yet. I think they were still in the Barati. So there was a long period where I was kind of waiting for those volumes to come out. And I had, that's what I just followed. I waited for those volumes to come out before I finally got to read them.
Huh. Curious.
Yeah. So, there's that. And number two, with the LGBT becoming more prominent in media, do you think manga has started to handle these kinds of characters better, or do you have any LGBT characters from manga that you liked?
Well, better is a relative term. So, yes. Handled well? Maybe not generally. the fact that, you know, manga comes from Japan means it's an entirely different culture. You know, LGBT discussion and controversy is a different matter over there than it is up here. I actually did a little bit of research into this before we started up. Basically, there is this article in the Japanese Constitution which, you know, says that marriage must be a matter of mutual consent between both sexes. But it was written that way basically to prevent there from being a male-dominated family. You know, give equal rights to the wife. So it is defined as man and woman, but not on purpose, essentially. And apparently most of the Japanese population is actually in favor of same-sex marriage. Not an overwhelming majority. It's like 51%.
Hmm.
But so it seems as though that there might be, you know, a very slow change coming about there. But maybe not as slow as, you know, that actually sounds. Because, I mean, you know, 10 years ago, you know, same-sex marriage in the United States was still a big area of controversy. In fact, I think it's been barely 10 years since, like, the first state legalized it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, maybe in, like, another 10 years or so, you're going to see a lot more of that as, you know, it basically it becomes more of a regular thing for, you know, same-sex couples to be accepted and treated the same as everybody else.
Yeah. I think it would help a long way. I think what manga needs is to start making more characters who are gay that aren't queens, essentially, you know, not, you know, particularly flamboyant characters or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think would go a long way. There are some, like, I, you know, bring up Zabuza and Haku again. It's, you know, two characters who had a homosexual relationship that was very, very subtle. But I think they could do with having more of them. There are still gay characters in manga, but a lot of the times they tend to be, that's their defining characteristic, is they're gay or things like that. And I'm speaking more to shonen series and things like that. I know there are manga that are about gay relationships, either way, and those ones I'm sure probably do have more nuanced relationship or characterizations in them. I just haven't read them yet. But I feel like manga would do a lot more if they had, like, an Omar Little kind of character in them, you know? A character who's a cool, badass character who just happens to be gay as well.
You know? And also, in a way, like, it seems sort of to me that in some cases in anime and manga, like, they've actually kind of been ahead of the curve with that, as opposed to Western animation. Like, you know, you look at, you know, what was the big thing for gay couples recently for Western animation? It was that Korra and Asami were heavily, heavily implied to be lesbians and were going to be in a romantic relationship. How did they pull this off? They looked at each other at the end of the series. Like, because they couldn't actually do it. Because, oh no, the kids. Oh no, you know, we can't actually go that far. Oh no. Yeah, it's got to be all subtext and stuff. What were their Japanese names? Sailor Uranus and Sailor Neptune were lesbians in, like, the early 90s in Sailor Moon. And then there was, like, the stuff with the Utena around the, I think a little bit earlier than that, or around the same time. Not necessarily like, oh, they're lesbians making out and stuff like that, but it's like, you know, you're talking like kind of the same thing like 25 years ago as we just had. And those were series that were, well, maybe not Utena. Okay, but Sailor Moon especially was marketed towards, you know, preteen and teenage girls. You know, a young audience. It's like, oh, here's a lesbian relationship, you know. So in some cases is that it actually is treated as like not as big a deal, or it has shown up ahead of the curve. Because, you know, if that had happened like in the early 90s, you know, having a lesbian couple in a kid series, people would be like, what the fuck? No, you can't do that. And that's why Deke made them cousins.
Which is wrong on an entirely different level. On many different levels. So yeah, there we go.
Alright, let's see here. This question. Andre Bond again. Dear Y for yourself, the Ruler of Time, and the Roar for Rolo T, I've been watching your old shows and wonder what is your favorite episode of Red Right to Left? Let's see here. My favorite episode. probably the Bleach ones, honestly. I'm quite proud of that. It took a lot of effort for me to put those together, and I'm quite proud of how they turned out, basically.
I like those a lot. I go back and watch those every couple months or so.
I do still plan on eventually going back to that, even though I haven't done Red Rage Lift in years now. I do still plan on eventually going back and actually finishing, or rather making additional parts to the Downfall of Bleach.
Interesting.
Alright, next question.
Alright, question here. Hey guys, I can't think of any clever puns for your names unless it gets really stupid, so I'll just go straight to the questions.
No, no, you gotta make it really stupid, that's the whole point.
Yeah. Three questions. First, what flashback in One Piece are you most excited to see more of? For me, it's Shanks or Gold Roger's because I've always wanted to know what life was like on Gold Roger's ship.
I am actually curious to see if we're going to get a flashback that focuses on Sanji's family at this point. It sort of seems like, I mean, because we've got something coming to better explain Sanji's backstory. We'll probably get some sort of flashback there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just because where we are right now in the series, that's what I'm most excited to see.
I'm definitely really excited to eventually get Gold Roger's flashback to explain why, you know, what made him sick, what made him make that decision to go back and basically die, you know, what... Yeah, he's a man who we know a lot, or we hear a lot about, but we don't actually know that much about him quite yet. You know, did he have a devil fruit? Did he, you know, what was his crew like by and large? You know, we know Raleigh and things like that, but there's still a lot of people within that group we just don't know that much about. So I would really like to see more of him and kind of find out about that. But I think the one I'm kind of really most excited about is Blackbeard's. To find out why he is the way he is, because as time's gone on with One Piece, we've started to get more and more detail into our villains, slowly, to explain why they are the way they are, and Blackbeard's one of the most interesting characters within the world of One Piece, because he's a villain who isn't against the same ideals that Luffy is, you know, that Luffy has. You know, he's all about dreams and going on adventures and having fun. He's just an evil person at the same time, so... I'm really kind of excited to see eventually when we get more information about why he is the way he is and maybe how long he's been planning some of these machinations he's had at work.
Right.
Number two, if you could go back in time and tell your past self the future of any manga series, what series would it be and what would you tell yourself? He gives the example, don't get excited for the Christmas Bowl, it won't be worth it.
I wouldn't spoil myself on any manga.
Ah, okay. No. You absolve yourself. I guess I would tell myself to go back and don't buy those volumes of Flame of Recca because it's not worth it. Save yourself that $80. Because everything else I feel like I'd want to still enjoy at some point. Like, I wouldn't be like, no, don't read Air Gear. You're going to be annoyed by it later on. I'd be like, but it's so fun to be irritated by Air Gear. You know, it's awful too, but it's fun. And third question here. What are some silly things in manga that you feel were really well justified? For me, it would be Brook's afro. Why does a skeleton have an afro? It's because it's the only thing that's left of him that Laboon will recognize.
Silly things being justified.
I mean, One Piece is the big thing for this because One Piece usually tends to add a justification for the way a lot of characters or a lot of things in the world have their strange quirks and things like that. Because usually almost anything in One Piece has some sort of actual explanation for it. So One Piece is good for it, but I'll try to steer away from that. You know, for as much as we shit on it, I did like them, the way Shimabukuro explained the 1mm gimmick for 1mm Yuta. That, you know, it was a lack of precision that caused the death of one of his pupils. And because of it, now he's extremely dedicated to it. So his, you know, entire joke about being like, oh, well, that sauce is 1mm cooked to perfection, or whatever, like that. And someone's like, that's not the degree you'd use for temperature! He's like, shut up!
He's like, Yuta, don't give 1mm of a fuck! And he drops him into a vat of acid, or whatever the fuck it was.
Fire! And you're like, why is this always below us?
God. I'll also give some, praise, because this is something that happened recently, was, Gaush's relationship with his sister, which was originally played as, you know, a complete joke. He's a creepy dude with a sister complex. His nose bleeds all the time because he loves his sister so much. And they gave him that backstory. It's like, God damn it. You made the character likable now. Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, Lost Series are really good at this sort of stuff, but mm-hmm. yeah. One Piece, I think, has a huge amount of them, but there's stuff in other series. And, yeah, that's it for this questions.
Alright, okay, next questions. One, what is the best and worst weird-sounding non-Japanese name you've seen in a manga? Well, the worst is Satellizer L. Bridget.
I'm going to assume we can't count Quincy names, because that, I feel, would win the best and worst at the same time. With such brilliant names as Nanananananajakoop and
well,
Katniss Catnip.
If we go into Espada names, Coyote Stark is a pretty good name, I think.
Coyote Stark's good. You know, Satellizer L. Bridget's a pretty awful one. I feel like you nailed them right there, back to back.
Let me see if I can remember the other Coyote Star. There was Baragon, Haribel, Okiora. No, that was terrible. Okiora is actually in general a pretty terrible name. Okiora El Cifer, I think, was his name. Or no, it was just Okiora Cifer. And I don't know actually how to pronounce his last name. Then there was Noitora. And I can't remember what his last name was, but he's got a double N in his name, so that's pretty stupid. Grimshaw Jagger Jack.
It just sounds like such a mouthful of a language that I don't feel like exists. Like, it's like a German name, kind of, you know, if you squint.
It's kind of French also, maybe. Zomari LaRue. Zera Porograntz.
I have one I want to bring up to you, and I want you to tell me if it falls on the good or bad side.
Okay.
Dracul Hawkeyes Mihawk.
Well, Hawkeyes is his...
Hawkeyes is his title, or his bounty name. But
Dracul Mihawk. I think that's good. Okay. Dracul Mihawk, I like, yeah. But, yeah, honestly, yeah, from ones I can remember, Coyote Stark is pretty damn good. Okay, next up. Having recently watched Edge of Tomorrow and reading on the news that Guillermo del Toro is pitching his monster adaptation to other networks, I'm curious, what other manga do you think would translate well into a live-action movie or miniseries?
That's what we're going to be doing this week for our bonus pod.
Yep, so tune in soon to find out our answer to this question. Thank you.
Yes.
All right, next up.
Question here. This isn't even a question so much. It just says, your reaction for when Torko's God ingredient turns out to be honey mustard. I imagine it'll actually be pretty tepid, where I'm just like, yes, of course it is. What else would it be? They're like, it's an ingredient that just goes on anything, like honey mustard. I'm like, thank you, obviously. What else? Why did we spend so much time wondering about the mystery when a bottle of Heinz honey mustard has been waiting in front of us the entire time, and it was God?
You didn't have to wait 500 chapters for this? Come on.
No.
Alright, next up from Mr. Ginger Straw Hat. First of three questions. One, I had no real good way to set up this question, so I'll just ask it outright. Is there anything that you enjoy... Okay. Anything that your enjoyed series in Jump could do to make the manga decline in quality to the point where you don't enjoy reading anymore? So there isn't a giant cluster in this question. Nick, you answer for Food Wars and My Hero Academia, and Chris, you answer for One Piece and World Trigger. Okay, what would make me not like Food Wars anymore? First off, more shameless fan service. Going back to, you know, the way that it originally appeared to be and stuff.
And especially if it got more and more gratuitous as well.
Right, and it kind of lost the element of comedy that came with it, basically. Like, you know, if someone just started, you know, tripping and falling face first into Megami's crotch, I would be just like, God damn it, fuck this series, you know. My Hero Academia, if it turned into the Spider-Man manga.
If Spider-Man from that manga appeared in My Hero, became
the What has my quirk done?
As he punches people in the face and breaks their neck. You deserve to die! All bad guys need to die!
You deserve to suffer and then die!
So fucked up. World Trigger would earn its way back onto my shit list if it became sort of like our impression of it at the beginning, where it's just about how super special awesome Yuma is, and it's just him quickly and effortlessly being members of Border to rise higher and higher ranks while the rest of the side characters just don't do anything anymore. That would be god-awful. One Piece, I mean, I feel like it could have a chapter that's just them systematically showing them murdering my mother, and I'd still read the series. One Piece would really have to do something absurd and, like, almost incomprehensible for me to be like, I won't read this series anymore. At this point, I'm so invested in it, I can't comprehend something they do. Even if it became, like, shameless fan service, even if it became, like, you know, horribly written with bad characters, I think I'd still read it just out of, you know, natural obligation.
Next question. Which would you like more, or want more? Nick, every dog in the world has a mute button that only you control, or a new perfect final third to iShield 21 with a bonus chapter that shows the devil bats stampeding over Edgison's face? I think I'd have to go with the dog mute button, honestly. Much as I would love having, you know, a perfected ending to iShield 21, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's one of those things where it's like you have to just kind of accept that some stories aren't perfect, and you're just going to have to live with them and accept that you love them even if they're not perfect, kind of thing. However, being able to silence dogs, oh yeah.
Nick's like, that's my jam right there. I can't wait for that.
Suddenly they're way more tolerable. I might actually get a dog if I can control it when it makes sound.
Aww. Scotia's very quiet.
Good for you.
Thank you. It's the only thing going so good in my life right now, Nick.
And she can't get me a Valentine's Day.
No, she didn't give me shit.
And for Chris, the ability to be best friends with Captain America, either the character... both the character and Chris Evans. Or for Daisuke Ashihara to draw a manga chapter for every new edition of World Trigger to my heart and back door.
My mind's starting to break trying to comprehend what it means for me to be best friends with Captain America, the character. Like, I become basically the Bucky, like, in the world now, where Captain America is just like, I should go see my friend Christopher Larius from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And he just, like, walks out the door in the comic book and shows up at my house like, Chris, I need your help. I feel like I'd have to go with that one, because that's, I mean, first and foremost, just thinking, you know, like, be best friends with Chris Evans. I feel like that's going to be able to, like, he can help me out career-wise. It's like, hey, you know, I'm going to get you a personal trainer. We're gonna get you into super hot shape, and you're going to be the next, I don't know, what's a young up-and-coming superhero I could play? You could be the next Richard Rider, the Nova, or whatever. I'm like, isn't he 15? Like, yeah, you'll be his uglier friend, Shmeb Shmeb, or something like that. I'm like, I'll still do this. A Marvel movie contract's a Marvel movie contract.
He'll be like the Ben Affleck to your Kevin Smith.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Well, they don't talk anymore, which is going to be sad. So, I don't want that to become my relationship with Chris Evans, where he's like, "Yeah, I hung out with Chris for a while, but you know, he's a great guy. You know, we don't talk anymore." Well, actually, no. It would be people asking me, "Why don't you talk to Chris Evans anymore?" Based on what I know of Kevin Smith, so that'd be a bummer. But the Ashihara one is tempting. But I feel I don't want him to have to be forced to draw that and have that negatively impact his opinion on his own series.
Oh, God. And finally, if you could have one series on a permanent weekly basis, which series would it be? It could be a multiple of two things, not just from Jump or WMR history. They could be canceled series like Cross Manager Barrage, series on hiatus like Hunter x Hunter and Beat the Vandal Buster, monthly series like Spirit Circle and Attack on Titan, or a series that take forever between chapters like Berserk and Teppu. Well, Teppu is actually finished now. Like, it actually reached a conclusion and is done now.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a good conclusion, too. Let's see. Series we could have back every week.
I am tempted to say Cross-Manage, because I would love a sports series in Jump to talk about each week, and Cross-Manage was really, really good. But I think the one I'd want even more than that is if JoJo Leon was weekly, and I could talk about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure every week. I think it'd be something I'd love a lot. That's like a far off dream, though.
I think actually I am going to go with Cross Manage, because I really do miss that series. It was really good. And also, and unlike Barrage, where, you know, Horikoshi, it ended up making an arguably better series, and is, you know, doing fine now. Kaito has tried and failed to, like, come back from Cross Manage. So, I, you know, mostly for the sake of, you know, having a Kaito series regularly for us to gush over, yeah, Cross Manage.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have that back in there. This is another set of questions from Mr. Ginger. I have a lot of questions this month because my mind is running on sugar and Wendy's bacon cheeseburger stuff with stuffed chicken nuggets and smothered in honey mustard sauce. Well, that does explain things. Number one, the question of why do you like manga usually tends to come up in discussions between a fan and a non-fan. I'm definitely not a non-fan, but it's an important question that I now want to pose to you guys. Why do you guys love manga, and can you remember the first time you thought to yourself, damn, I love this medium?
No. I have no idea. I this is, like, a terrible, because, like, I, you know, I've been, you know, kind of the manga guy for a fair amount of time now, like, getting close to 7 years, I want to say. And it's really bad that I can't answer that. Like, I have no idea why I love manga in general. I really don't.
I'll explain it this way. Manga, my method to gain into manga is basically the story of kind of nerd culture in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, because I was into the nerdy stuff. And we were into the same kind of nerdy stuff. Like, you watched Digimon, you watched Pokemon, you watched all these shows and on, like, Kids WB in the morning. And many of the shows we liked tended to be Japanese shows. You know, they tended to be, like, our Yu-Gi-Ohs, our Dragon Ball Zs, our things like that. Toonami was on, and we watched Rurouni Kenshin and Yu Yu Hakusho, those sorts of shows. And me and my friend Frank back in the day did that stuff. We watched those series. We enjoyed them because they were cool series, like, you know, action series that you can enjoy each week. And they tended to be better than some of the American stuff since they usually had a plot to them. From there, my friend Frank started picking up the volumes, the manga, because he had more disposable income than I did at the time. He wanted to, and he picked them up and started just talking to me about the series he was reading and all the different stories they were telling, the characters that were in them, the powers that they had, and all that stuff. And I got interested in it from that and just started reading the manga from there. And it just became kind of like a slightly more exclusive club between an already exclusive club of people who watched anime to be like, oh, and we read the manga too. Like, we read that. It was just like a cool way for us to kind of connect with one another. And then when I met more people online who were like, yeah, I read the manga, or I'm up to date on this series and I'm talking about it, like, you just kind of want to know about it so you can engage people with it in that regard. So, I mean, that's kind of how I got into it. And I guess that's why I love it, because I was with a community of people who also loved it. I think it's the best way I can kind of explain. I mean, I can recognize now that I love the medium because it does a lot about what I kind of enjoy about comics without the stuff I hate about comics, i.e. like event crossovers or long periods of time between chapters or parts of the story or being ludicrously expensive. I just like having like a way to weekly enjoy a story that is very, you know, I don't want to say childish, but very, you know, juvenile, simple, fun, easy to digest, but I can just enjoy. It's a nice kind of escapism, I guess. And I enjoy manga for that immensely.
Mm.
All right. Number two, you guys have said before that the current best villain in Jump is Azami, but you've never really touched on what you feel is the flip side of this question. So who do you feel is the best protagonist in Jump right now? I believe it's Soma, because although he may act like a bit of, a head in the clouds know-it-all, he's got a big heart and a lot of charisma. That's weird. I've never heard of that. This almost feels like an oxymoron.
And the clouds and know-it-all.
Yeah, it feels like an oxymoron a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Who do we feel is the best protagonist? It's tough because I feel like there's like three or four candidates to it, and they all are viable in very different ways.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Luffy is a fantastic character, protagonist, because he has his method of doing things. And it's, you know, the right way, it's the traditional way, but it's still intrinsically his. Like, he still wants to beat the bad guy. He still wants to help his friends. He still wants to do all these things every protagonist generally does, but he doesn't do it for the same reason they do. He's like, I want to beat this guy because he's in my way, or because he wants to be king of the pirates and I want to be king of the pirates or something. Like, he usually has a weird reason for wanting to do it. But then I'd also say Osamu's a fantastic protagonist because he's the underdog and he tries so hard and you want to see him succeed. And then you can say, as you say, Soma, because he's right there. And he never lets something bad just happen. He's always going to stand in between. Like, there's protagonists who are good in very different ways. And I don't know if I can put one over the other necessarily.
All right, well, let's see if we can put all the protagonists and just line them up, because you asked specifically for Jump. So, we've got Asta, Ichigo, Soma, Deku, Raku, I guess, Luffy,
Toriko,
and Osamu. Toriko we're going to dispose of immediately, because he hasn't really done a lot recently. Ichigo we're going to put aside, because he hasn't done a lot recently. Asta, I think, is actually kind of coming along, because we've, you know, really warmed up to him recently. He's still a fucking idiot, but he's gotten more likable than he started off as. Soma's definitely up there. Let's see. Raku, of course, we're going to also dispose, because although he's finally getting his head out of his ass, it's like, wow, this is something you should have done like 100 chapters ago, idiot. So yeah, I guess it's down to then Soma, Deku, Luffy, and Osamu. And yeah, you're right. Most of them are in different ways. You know, Soma and Luffy have their own way of doing things. They're both really headstrong and weird about it. Osamu is very traditional and working hard, and Deku is similar to him, although in a more idealistic sense. So it is hard to choose between those four. I guess you could, if you split it down to the ones that are similar to each other, you might be able to, I guess, choose between them. Like, if you had to choose between Soma and Luffy, you might be able to make a decision. If you had to choose between Deku and Osamu, you might be able to make a decision because they're very similar to each other. But if you're going for overall, then it throws a monkey wrench into the whole thing. So... it's sort of like how, you know, you might be able to easily choose an offensive MVP and a defensive MVP, but whoever you choose between those two may not necessarily be the overall MVP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
One last question.
Yes. Since it's only a few days away at the time of this letter, I have Star Wars on the mind. So if you guys could drop one Star Wars character in any Shonen Jump title, who would you pick and why? Qui-Gon Jinn into World Trigger, because Liam Neeson in World Trigger would be great.
I'm going to take a different approach. I'm going to treat as a Star Wars character done by a Shonen Jump author in a Shonen Ooh. Jump title, and say Jar Jar Binks in One Piece.
Oh man, to salvage that character?
Yeah. And it wouldn't just be like, oh, someone who can actually do comedy doing a comedy character. It would be a comedy character in a series that welcomes comedy characters.
Because and would fit into it, too. Yeah, you could just almost make him a fish man, too.
Right. I mean, and people point out, one of the problems with Jar Jar is not just that he is annoying, it is that he was burned with all of the comic relief in Phantom Menace, which made him annoying. So, you know, if you put a comic relief character in a series full of comic relief characters, he would fit in a lot better. And if you did find him annoying, it wouldn't be nearly as bad, because it's like, ah, I can't fight for that. Alright. This is a really weird question from Christopher Chow. I've got another pointless question for you guys. Your houses are on fire, and you're stuck inside.
Oh dear.
The only people available to help you are Osamu, Alice, Frosh, Bakugo, and Gremmy. What happens?
This is such an odd question that I love in the same way. Alright. I'm torn on a couple of things. One, I feel like Bakugo is the reason my house is on fire. I feel he's the one who has caused this. we're all going to have our mutual interests in making sure we get out. So I feel like Remy's going to be like, don't worry, I'll fix this. And he's going to imagine a bucket of water, and he's going to throw it at it, and then he's going to imagine the bucket under the sink refilling up with water. And I'm like, Remy, we're all going to die. And he's like, I got it. And he's going to imagine two buckets of water and splash those.
And then Frosh is going to be like, Frosh will help too!
Frosh thinks this is a good idea! At which point, I'm like, alright, so I have two people here who are actually
going
to help
me. Imagine the exact same thing.
And I'm like, alright, I have two people here who are going to be able to help me out. And I'm like, Alice, do you have any way to help us out? And she's like, no, my thing needs to be really good with cooking technology.
So I'm going to just walk out the door.
Yeah.
And she, like, flips the cell off and leaves.
So I'm assuming Osama's like, I'll get us out of here, and he'll probably die in the process heroically, and it's going to be really sad.
Bakugo has already exploded the wall in order to get outside.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe we can all get out completely fine. Maybe we'll all get out. Actually, you know what's going to happen? Osama's going to want to, like, make the heroic sacrifice. I'm like, no, we can get out. But he's like, we have to help everybody. I'm like, no, don't worry. I'm telling you, everybody's out. We get outside, and we're all, like, in our fucking, our blankets and cocoa drinking, right. Like, recovering from, like, the trauma. And Osama's like, hey, where's Frosh? And I'm like, ah, oh, he couldn't make it out. But I knew if I told you he was still in there, you'd have to go back in to save him. Anyway, it's fine. He was a cat. He didn't really have a soul.
Kirby's like, don't worry, I got this. And he imagines another one of himself. And he's like, I'm Frosh. I think so, too. You couldn't have even imagined yourself as Frosh? What? No.
That's impossible. That's how do you do that?
Hold on, let me try doing that. Just kills over dead.
It's just a brain in a jar. I'm like, huh. Didn't see this one coming.
Okay.
Next question?
Yes.
Alright, this is from... I didn't give a name, so... Dear Wire Ruler of the Bacon Tea... What would you say are the strengths and weaknesses of each of the manga that you recap each week? Does one have better action scenes or battles? Does one have better written female characters? Does one create better arcs that you want to follow than the others? Which one is better ensemble cast, art style, world building, mythology, villains? And what is your favorite flavor of Pop-Tart and the oddest food you put honey mustard on? So those are, I guess, are two technically separate questions. Yeah,
brunch or cinnamon. Easy.
I put honey mustard on eggs, which I guess some people find very strange. I like mustard. Before even I found out I loved honey mustard, I used to put mustard on eggs, and people were like, that's weird. I'm like, is it?
Everyone has their own eggs thing, though.
So. Yeah. So I guess that'd be the oddest
thing. I think it's weird that people eat scrambled eggs with ketchup, for example.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that and done that, and I enjoy it, but honey mustard, I think, is better. Anyways, strengths and weaknesses of the manga.
Instead of answering every single facet of this question...
I think it's just easier to say something good and bad about each of the series, like what it does good and what it does bad.
Black Clover does side characters really well. I think we're coming to understand. The more that someone is not made the focus, the more it seems like they can be really likable. Presumably because the author is allowed to do weird stuff with them, as opposed to having to stick to more normal things. You know? Weakness...
It doesn't do tension so great quite yet.
It's
working on it, but it still doesn't have particularly great moments of drama.
Bleach, it looks cool sometimes. Whether that is in terms of a character design that works out really well, or in terms of a really cool looking attack, it can look really cool sometimes.
And I think it also has, I mean, the depth behind it is awful, but I think it does have a cool world and characters within it.
Mm-hmm.
They're very fun and memorable, so to that regard, I enjoy it.
Weakness, look at my past 5 years of rants.
the writing, yeah.
Fairy tale, it can be really fun. I think when I caught up to Fairy Tale and we first talked about it, I like it because it goes at such a pace where even if things are bad, you don't care, you know, because it's like, whatever, everything's just going to move on to the next thing next week anyway. And even if it's good, it's just like, okay, well, that was nice. Let's move on to the next thing next week. And it's nice to have that if you're basically not rooting for it to be your favorite series. weakness, God damn it, Hero.
I would say biggest strength I think of the series is it can do everything completely 100% right. Mm-hmm. It can be amazing at times. Its weakness is that it just often doesn't reach that point, and it tends to fall flat at points, particularly in villains. It doesn't have very memorable villains. They kind of tend to be amorphous evil blobs with a design.
Strength for Food Wars is its capacity to do ridiculous things, and at once make them hilarious and super dramatic, because, you know, it is a cooking series. Weakness, it seems to have trouble splitting attention between multiple protagonists. I'm just getting that impression now. We kind of have, like, stretches of time where, you know, Megumi sometimes gets a little bit of the focus or something like that. But it never seems to be, like, you know, a focus on a group.
I was going to say, I feel like its biggest weakness is establishing a side cast. Because I feel like we keep switching who are going to be our predominant secondary characters. You know, it seemed like maybe it was going to be, like, the Hayama, Kurokiba group for a little bit. And then kind of moved around to, like, maybe Alice and that group are going to be, like, our secondary. And then now it's like maybe all of Polaris Storm are secondary cast, and now it's like now Aldini brothers are back. It's just kind of tough telling who are those characters, because I feel it would do the series a lot of good to kind of establish a secondary group around Soma.
Well, I mean, I think that, to be more specific on it, it's not necessarily like the establishment of a secondary cast. It's moving them out of the background, really. Because it seems like they're always up to something, but you never really get the time to appreciate it. You know, like you said, yeah, it looked like we were going to have, you know, that Alice, Kurokiba, Hayama trio be the secondary plotline during the cooking festival. And they were, but you only really saw them struggle for, you know, occasionally every few chapters, and then the result of them having gotten it together, and that was it. So, yeah, would definitely, you know, like to see more of, you know, all the secondary characters that are, you know, available. Because it seems like now that we're, you know, going through this purging of the clubs, then finally a few of them will get a little bit of focus. But, you know, once that's done, they're probably just going to go right back to the background.
Yeah.
Presumably, once we actually start getting into the full swing of the war between Central and everybody else, then we'll finally get some attention on them. But we'd like to see more. Mm-hmm. Let's see. My Hero Academia does a lot of things really well.
It does art particularly great. I think it's doing a good job of creating a very distinct style to it that is incredibly awesome and building a good lore. I feel it could do a little bit more with... I don't want to say building a side cast, because it does have a good side cast, but I feel there are more characters that just aren't being used completely well. And kind of having a full arc. It's, you know, we're a while into the series, and I don't think we've really had, like, a true arc, per se.
I think that is a bit of it. And I think that might just have to do with the way that the series is being, you know, done. Because it is reminiscent of Western comic books, you know, where storylines don't necessarily last for more than several, you know, volumes of the comic. Therefore, you know, you tend to see, you know, storylines last an incredibly long amount of time in terms of, like, page count and stuff. But, yeah, I do agree that it would be nice to see, like, a really long build happen so that you get a good build and then a good payoff to it. Isekoi can be really funny. Basically... yeah. It's a harem manga. It's a very tame and very well done at times version of a harem manga. But basically, my thing would be like, if it were less like a harem manga, then I would like it more. Like a lot of stuff that it's doing recently, if it had been doing that the whole time, it would be one of my favorite manga, I think.
But because so much of it had to be spent dancing around, will they, won't they, etc., right. etc.
Which is why, like, I've only bothered to even, you know, do my, you know, passing mention of it recently. It's because, like, well, because there's nothing really to talk about. It's because they just had, you know, oh, what is Raku up to with the girl who's the focus of this month? You know.
Mm.
And nothing really happened. Where were we?
One Piece. It has a fantastic world. It has a brilliant world, great characters in it, and a tremendous pacing to it, in that it's made the world strong to always give you something to look forward to without ever damaging that along the way. You know, they don't introduce something to then have Luffy beat it. You know, the Baratie arc, we knew the seven warlords were out there, and there's still several of them they haven't even come up against, really, that they've fought. You know, there's always just been something bigger around the horizon.
Right.
But in downside, I think it does honestly have one of the weaker female characters in Jump's lineup right now. I love Nami, and I do like Robin, but I do feel like the series could do a lot better with having better written female characters, and I do think at times it can drag. Also, yeah. The art style, particularly when it comes to women, has become a real issue for me in recent years, so I would point that out.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Toriko. God damn it. It can do fight scenes incredibly well. Like, absurdly well. They, you know, at its best, you know, it's visceral, it's exciting, it's heart-pounding. Weakness needs to, you know, fucking do shit again.
I will give this to Toriko. Toriko is written by a very brilliant and very brilliant man, and somebody who has a very strong knowledge of comedy and the series he is writing for, of being like that kind of world, because everything Shimabukuro seems to be doing is half parody at times, and in that regard it's brilliant, but it can be very frustrating, especially when the tone of the, or not necessarily the tone, but essentially the focus of the series has switched from being more straight of a shonen battle manga to being more of a parody of a shonen battle manga, and then it just gets kind of confusing.
And World Trigger, it's gripping, has great characters, a interesting world, really cool tactical battles.
But it might possibly even have the best supporting cast of any of the series, or ensemble cast, just because they're large and they have a lot, but that also is a bit of a downside for the series,
right,
because it has so many that if you don't read all the, you know, extra materials to know half the details about them, you'll probably just forget them.
Yeah, we have to read Unmasked, you know?
Yeah.
Or Untriggered, or whatever.
Yeah.
Alright, okay, next question. Dear Y-Rot and Rolot, you two talk about The Wire a lot, but I wonder if you have watched Breaking Bad. I've watched 2.5 seasons of it, and then I stopped cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you stopped at a certain point, too.
I watched through, and it's like it infuriates some people, I know, because it infuriates my brother every time. I've watched through the 4th season and like 3 episodes into season 5, which is the final season, and
right.
I just have not finished it. And I know it irritates the shit out of people, because like, why don't you just finish it? I'm just like, I just don't really care to. I will say in regards to Breaking Bad that the first season of Breaking Bad is phenomenal. I consider it part of like the pantheon of legendary television. The same way I consider Wire on that thing, I feel everybody should watch the first season of Breaking Bad because it is insanely awesome and just fantastically well written. There are some scenes that I think I will always hold amongst as being some of the greatest scenes of all time. The episode with Walt and the guy he has in his basement, that he's trying to consider whether or not he has to kill him, because it'd be the first time he'd ever take a death in cold blood. It is one of the most emotionally powerful and human scenes I've ever seen in television. Just that scene of him,
where he can't find the last bit of the plate,
searching for the plate, and you're just like, oh,
he's like, please, please let me find it,
begging for it. It's brilliant. But I think my issue with Breaking Bad is that as time went on, I got less and less interested in it. and it started to annoy me. I got really annoyed that like 90% of season 2 was one cold opening about a fucking teddy bear in the water, and it just continued to expand more and more. Like, oh, and the fucking, there's like a horrible accident that supposedly happened around Walt's house, and then like the reason for it is tangentially connected to Walt and doesn't actually impact his life very much at all. You're like, this is such a waste of time. Why did we spend so much on this?
Hmm. I think that you know, that kind of story that deals with the, you know, that deals with Walt, you know, falling into the darkness and Jesse struggling to find his way kind of gets diluted if you draw it out over that length of time, because there's only so many times you can go, yeah, well, it's kind of a terrible person now, before you're just like, well, I don't have any doubt in my mind that he's a terrible person. What more reason do I have to watch him turn into a terrible person?
Yeah, it has fantastic writing in it, and, you know, great scenes, but it is a series I think kind of dragged itself along a little too much. I just haven't bothered finishing with the fifth season because I already know what happens. I just don't have much of an interest in finishing it. I kind of watched through the fourth season because I loved Gustavo. I thought he was great, and that he's not in the series anymore. I really just don't have much of a strong desire to finish it.
Everyone turns into Kool-Aid at the end, right?
Yeah, that's you. Yeah. You've got it.
Right.
That's how it ends. Next question here. No name here. This is, hey, DMY, Dogmaster Y, and Two Hilarios. Love the podcast. Best manga podcast I've heard, and the visual editions are amazing additions. So thank you to Infamous Planet and Felix Stark 2. Three questions for you. One, what was your guys' first introduction to manga and anime that really made you try other series? I guess this would be, what would be the first... I guess, since we kind of already answered this, maybe you say what would be some of the first series we branched out into from manga and anime that maybe we didn't already have a reason to?
I got into manga basically because, like I mentioned earlier, I watched the Bleach anime and then I read the Bleach manga once I had caught up to a certain point so that I could continue keeping up with the series. And because of that, other people suggested, like, oh, you should try out Naruto, you should try out this series, you should try that. So, yeah, it basically, it was because the people that I hung out with and, you know, talked Yu-Gi-Oh! With online were into that stuff, and so I got into it so I could, you know, understand it better and understand their interests better, and then that led to me trying other stuff out.
Mm-hmm. I got into some odd series. Generally, it just became what was ever available in English, you know, at the time in manga, so I tried out a lot of weird series in there. So I tried out, like, Get Backers and, you know, Beat the Vandal Buster. It didn't have an anime or anything like that at the time, not in the US at least, so those are some of the series that I kind of, like, picked up just from trying it. And generally, since my friend Frank picked up almost everything Shonen Jump made, I was the one that tried out, basically so we could have a difference, you know, we could lend each other different series. I would pick up stuff that wasn't Shonen Jump, so that's how I got into Flame of Recca, into Air Gear, into Get Backers, into, you know, a lot of other different non-Jump series, just because I looked at the volume. It seemed interesting to me, and I'd pick it up, basically. Number two, my own instruction to anime was One Piece. If you guys could have any one of the abilities from the CP9's Rokushiki martial art, which one would you want, whether in-universe or in your everyday lives? Do you mean to name all six for you, Nick?
Yes, please.
Storm Leg, which was the ability to kick and basically send, like, a shockwave or, like, a slash of wind through the air. There was Gepu Moonwalk, which was where you could kick off the air and jump, you know, continuously. I want to say Tekko. Tekko? Takai, that was it. Takai was, like, you could strengthen your body like armor. Like, it would seem to be iron. Shigan was the finger pistol, where you could move your fingers with enough speed and force to basically make it like a bullet to pierce things. Kami-E was making your body like paper, so you could kind of be... very difficult to hit. And I think, was that all six that I named there?
Or you named one? Five.
Five? And Soru, which was the super speed one. Essentially, like, instant transmission slash what Shojuro's technique it was in Rurouni Kenshin is the way I always classified it. The ability to move, like, short distances very quickly. It almost seemed like you're teleporting.
I had to go with that one.
In universe or in your everyday life?
In my everyday life.
Yeah, it'd be pretty. That would be pretty sweet. Gepu, I think I'd like a lot, but I guess that one has deficiencies. Also, though, I think I might take Stormlake, just because that would be pretty sweet to be able to, like, kick and just send, like, shockwaves of slashing energy out of people. Like, ah, why?
Because fuck you.
Because they suck my dick. That's why. Last one here. Would you guys consider doing a review of the manga My Balls?
Well, considering we did Akisora, I don't think that we can actually say no.
Everything's on the table, I guess, now.
Oh, God. Considering how much of My Balls I actually ended up reading, it's not as bad as Akisora. It's, like, just as, you know...
Shameless.
Lewd. And, yeah, lewd and shameless, but it's not as bad. All right. Next up, from Glock3BB.
It's Brennan!
Hey! Dear Chris, no, not like the candy, but somewhat more enjoyable, I guess. T. Larios. And Nick, penultimate emperor of the ages, Freeman. 1. What is the most confusing instance of character bashing or hate that you guys have seen? A lot of people hate characters just because they see them as threats to their ships. So I'm going to say that in general. But I also say that I think that Taya / Anzu from Yu-Gi-Oh! Gets way too much goddamn hatred. Because they're just like, they're stupid, bullshit, annoying friendship speeches. Although I think that is also tangentially related to shipping, because she gets in the way of all of people's favorite Shodenai stuff from Yu-Gi-Oh!
I can't think of someone who really fits this. I guess I don't follow enough of, like, fan feedback and opinion.
Well, you didn't used to write fan fiction.
No, I did not write fan fiction, so I don't write it. I, you know what? I can give you this. The most confusing instance of character hating and bashing, myself for hating Robin for so long, solely because one weirdo nerd on the internet made me really dislike her. that would be my weirdest one, I guess.
Okay. 2. Have either of you been burnt out by a certain ship? Not necessarily dislike it, but just that its prevalence in either the fandom or the series itself make you tired of seeing it. For example, I was fine with Naruto and Hinata ending up together, but if I have to read one more Naruto-Hina fanfic, I might just go crazy. Well, then stop reading Naruto-Hina fanfic!
I feel like these questions are very determined on whether or not we read fanfiction, and I don't read fanfiction. I don't see enough ships to really care that much, to be completely honest. I don't think I could be burnt out by a particular ship. Maybe people are burnt out by me pushing Kisamu and Kitoro Samu so much, but I don't know if I really have a good answer otherwise.
Yeah, let's see. Thank you for the hours of constant entertainment. You're welcome. Have a happy new year, which lets you know where we are in our emails. Sincerely, Glock3BB. P.S. Naruto to Yuya for life.
Who's to Yuya?
She was the flute girl that Shikamaru fought in the Save Sasuke arc.
Still haven't read it.
Really?
Yeah, I've never read that arc in Naruto. Yeah. There's, just like how that happened with One Piece, that took me forever to get to Little Garden, the same things exist for Naruto and Bleach. I still haven't read the start of the Arakawa arc. There's a period between when the Aizen arc ends, or the Soul Society, I guess, arc ends, and when I think I picked it back up when... Ichigo and his friends were fighting, like, the lower tier Espada, like those one on, like, the wind girl and the guy Chad punched with his, you know, skull power or whatever.
Yeah, that is a fair
separation there. I've read bits and pieces of it in between, but there's just breaks in those manga I never read because the English volumes hadn't been out at that time, and by the time they eventually came out, I just wasn't collecting those series anymore.
I'm not burnt out on any ships. I don't really take enough stock in fan opinion of ships in order to really care about that. There are some that I don't understand the popularity of the ship, though. Sasusaku is you know, one. I kind of get that because, you know, for one, it's canon, but the people who are just like, oh, no, it's like, what the fuck, are we reading the same series? Like, seriously? Do you seriously want these people to end up together? She won't be happy. But the one that I really take umbrage with is Okihime, which is Okiora and Orihime.
Oh, just because it makes no sense. He was kind of a shithead to the entire...
Right, because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, but they're so sexy, so even though he abused her and was trying to emotionally manipulate her to, you know, stop her, oh, no, they would have such sexy babies. And
that's,
you know,
so fucked up.
Well, not in those exact words, but, you know, it's like, oh, they're totally hot and stuff, you know. Bleach chips in general I don't really care much for, because it is very clearly not... It's, like, the least romantically minded series I can think of, honestly. So, yeah, there you go.
Questions here from Cinema Freak X. Hey, Y-Roller-T, Y-Roller-T, Y-Roller Time and Roller-T, Happy New Year and hope you're doing well. I have a couple of questions for you, one those being My Hero Academia and one being Naruto-related. First, since we know there are people in the world that don't have powers or useful quirks, do we think we'll almost have the appearance of some non-powered heroes or villains relying on just sheer skill or gadgets as foil for Deku?
Like a Batman type of character.
Yeah, I believe 100% we will. I mean, Stain almost seemed to be this until you kind of found out he did have a somewhat useful quirk. But I imagine there might even be members within this group of villains we're dealing with right now who may not have particularly useful powers. That lizard guy seems like his quirk might just be to look like a lizard. I mean, he took a bunch of swords and, like, rubber banded them together. So, I mean, who knows? He might actually have a quirk, but I would not be shocked if members of this group are revealed to be more gadget-based or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there was that one gadget girl during the tournament.
And the police chief was just a dog. He didn't seem to have any other useful ability. At least he didn't describe it. His quirk was to look like a dog. So I think we definitely will see characters like that in the future. Two, would you rather Bakugo stay a hero and have an intense rivalry like All Might and Endeavor, and eventually slow turn into a villain, especially with the guarantee that no matter what path was taken, it was well written? Oh, so this is a would you rather, like which one would you want?
Yeah. Assuming that they would be both entertaining and quality and stuff like that.
I would really rather he stay a hero with an intense rivalry, if only because I particularly like when series don't do some things that are different than what I've normally seen, and I feel like every series has that character who goes down the dark side and isn't really evil, and they just have that, you know, your Sasuke, your Gray actually did it finally, where he seemed to have joined Avatar for a little bit, and we just had it with Uryu in Bleach, where it seemed like he was evil and wasn't really, you know, you just have, basically, whenever your Lancer character eventually goes evil for a little bit and then comes back, I feel like we've seen it tons and tons of times, and I'd like it if Bakugo was always actually like, no, I'm really aggressive and mean, but I want to be a hero, goddammit. Like, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. I feel the same way. It might also be, you know, just a little bit of my fanboy, you know, side for the series, being like, no, don't be evil, Bakugo, no!
You're like an old grandmother, like, oh, no, Bakugo, no! You're such a good boy, though! Yeah, so there's that. And three, final question here. With Naruto Game, a sequel manga series being overseen by Kishimoto, what are some of your hopes and concerns for the series? I'll tell you what my concern right now is, that they're going to sexualize Sarada too much, because I don't like that she's wearing no pants and high heels, but other people have told me that I guess other ninja in Naruto previously had not worn, or had worn high heels before, so maybe that's not as big an issue as I think. Still, though, that's one of my biggest concerns, is like making that kind of weird. But honestly, I don't have many expectations, because it's not being written by Kishimoto. He's, you know, overseeing it, but that involvement is still rather limited, by and large.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really don't have any idea what to expect because of that, yeah.
All right,
next email from Jack Lebrano. Dear Nick Cage and Chris Hemsworth.
Ooh, I definitely feel like I got the edge in that one.
Oh, why do you think that?
Oh. I've got long, flowing hair, and you just look like some dude from the 1800s.
I can have long, flowing hair. Haven't you ever seen Con Air? I was great in that movie.
I actually like Con Air.
Con Air is a great fucking movie.
Con Air is a much different movie. It's basically Barbershop on a plane, which
God,
which seems like the plot of Soul Plane, but very different movie still.
Oh, yeah, that was a fucking stupid movie. I saw the movie when I was, like, 17. It was like, God, I don't feel... I feel like I'm too white to watch this movie. anyway. Couple My Hero Academia questions. One thing that I always like about this is how it occasionally gives the spotlight to seemingly minor characters who get a lot more developed later on, like that cool moment Coda had during the final exams, or even the sports festival where we got Todoroki's backstory. So out of all the students in Class A, which student do you want to learn about the most? I want to see more from Muraraka, honestly. Because she has sort of been treated like most of the other students in Class A. You know, she has a close friendship with Deku slash crush on him. But aside from, you know, her fight with Bakugo, we haven't really gotten to see much from her. You know, she had the moment where they lucked into winning their test, but, she just lucked into it. We didn't get to see her really do much. So I want to see her kind of take actions that make her match the perception of her being, you know, the third most important character in the series, or fourth most around there.
I you know what, I'll go with a slightly more obscure character, but I would really actually like to see more of, and it's going to sound bad because I don't know her name, but the girl who has the ear jack that she uses to, like, hear things. I think she just has a really cool design, and I like that character a lot, and I would love to just kind of see more of her, basically. I think she has the potential to be cool. But I guess, you know, even more than Asoe, I guess actually might be the biggest answer. I really do want to kind of see more of that character, because she seems like she has a very unique personality, and I'd like to see more of that.
Kyoka, by the way.
Kyoka, there you go.
Yeah, she has a cool, and mostly she's just kind of been, like, the quiet one up until she took control of that test that she had with Coda. Mm-hmm. Two, when you were reviewing the chapter when Shigaraki was talking with Deku, you missed a panel which I think explains his entire background and mindset, where it's heavily hinted that he may have killed his own parents due to not understanding how his quirk works. Can you link to see what I'm talking about?
I believe it's a panel where it looks like you see corpses on the ground in his reaction, maybe implying that he may have accidentally killed his own parents.
And also there's crumbled hands, like the ones that he wears all over his body. So maybe, like, he's collected the hands of people he's killed. Yeah, it's possible. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because at the time he was just talking about, you know, the only reason people feel safe is because All Might is here. He wasn't talking about anything that seemed necessarily related. It's possible that, like, it had nothing to do with, you know, him killing someone. Maybe, like, All Might failed to protect his parents / someone else close to him instead. We'll see.
Very, very possible. Moving on here. Next question from Satellite. Dear Nick Time and Chris T. Nick Time. What's Nick Time a pun on?
Why, Ruler of Time?
I guess. Maybe just... Oh, I guess just a bridging, because I'm Chris T. He, like, combines the bridges and names. All right. What does the Renegon actually do? I threw this question to other people, and I can't seem to find a consistent answer, if there even is one.
Well, it is an evolved version of the Sharingan. And what it was established was that if the Renegon is implanted into different people, then they have shared sight. And also, Pain could control multiple people at once, as could Madara. So, all those things.
Let's see here. Grants the wielder. I'm going onto the Naruto wiki here for this, because I only knew it, like, I think it has a bunch of people on it, and I think it has something to do with the power to control life or death. I don't know. Grants the wielder a wide range of abilities without any known chakra requirements to keep the eyes active. Certain abilities are only available to the original owner of the Renegon, but the possession of a single transplant Renegon can grant overwhelming power. They are able to see chakra as well as its flows to the body and at least 8-10 ketsu, but cannot see through obstructions such as smoke bombs. They can master any jutsu as well as all five nature transformations with ease. They're able to create black receivers, which they can then transmit their chakra, fully decipher Hagoromo's tablet, and counter the effects of the infinite Tsukuyomi. They also grants the user family abilities known collectively as the six pass techniques, which, oh, and those were like the six different people that
he
had.
The six paths of pain, each of them had a special ability. One would summon, and
some of them kind of sucked. Some of them seemed much less useful than the others. A seventh ability, Outer Path, is said to allow the user to preside over life and death, granting the ability to revive the dead, as well as summon and control the demonic statue of the Outer Path, and manifest chakra chains to bind the others. So, I guess there's a seventh person that Pain himself made himself into.
Right, because there were this, well, because Pain would send out the six paths of pain in order to fight people, while he himself was actually not present on the battlefield.
Yeah, he was like a decrepit body in a tank, basically, at that point.
Essentially, yes.
So yeah, that's what the Rinnegan apparently is.
A lot of things. Alright, next up. Dear Rollo T, I know that you are a Kingdom Hearts fan, and I wonder what worlds you wanted in Kingdom Hearts 3, and what character you would like to summon.
I mean, it's tough because Disney has acquired so much more property that I don't know if it technically counts since the last time they did like a big Kingdom Hearts game. If they had the rights to the Marvel universe, I would love to see a Marvel universe in there. Like, even if you just restrict it to like one character and you just have Iron Man in there. I mean, I'd prefer Captain America, but Iron Man's probably the more popular one, I'm sure. A Star Wars universe would be awesome, but if you keep it to just like the more traditional Disney properties, I'd really like to see, I mean, a Frozen world's kind of obvious, but that would be awesome. I'd love to see an Up world, or not an Up, Inside Out, but I'd hate for them to do it because you take such a brilliantly subversive and like intelligent movie and they'd make the antagonist of the Inside Out world some like fucking jack-in-a-box heartless bullshit. They're like, this is the reason Riley's sad. It's not her own emotions and growing up over time and the fact that we all have inherent sadness. Her heart was stolen by darkness and we had to just fight this jack-in-the-box to get rid of it.
Yeah, that'd be difficult because that movie has no antagonist.
Yeah, I mean...
The antagonist of the movie is conflicting emotions.
Yeah, but they generally, if that situation ever happens, they just make something up, like a monster or something. But I think that'd be a fun world to kind of go through, like, you know, the mind, essentially. And, I'm trying to think of another... Toy Story would be fucking awesome, but I feel like if we haven't gotten it now, then Pixar must be under some kind of contract where they can't. They made a big deal of the fact that Big Hero 6 is going to be in a world in the next game. And
who the fuck cares?
I'm like, one, who cares? You didn't need to make a big announcement. Two, is this
best
game...
animated feature. Yeah, whatever.
Is this game ever coming out? Kingdom Hearts 2 came out in like 2008. What is this?
It came out on the PS2,
goddammit.
Well, it came out relatively close to the first Kingdom Hearts, didn't it? Like, it was just a couple of years afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it was about the average time you'd expect for a sequel. And then they've
around 2 or 3 years, yeah.
Yeah, and then they've kind of just been doing spin-offs since then.
It's like, you know, it's the Valve method of releasing games.
No, I mean, it's a little bit different than the Valve method because they still release games. They just release superfluous fucking additions to the story that don't actually seem to progress things further. They just keep releasing filler arcs, essentially, instead of the next plot.
Okay.
That's my name. It's from Sig, the Apprentice of Alchemy. Greetings, Nick, the Wise Man of Ages, and Chris, the Lord of Thunder. I love that, the Lord of Thunder.
That's sweet.
Since you've had so much fun with the team assembly questions in the past, I figure I'd give it one more try. If you could gather people from any manga to form a team in an AD in a MOBA...
We've already answered this question.
Yeah,
next.
I think we did. Thank you very much for your question, Seek, Apprentice of Alchemy.
I'm sorry. It does just take a really long time, and we did actually answer that question before. That exact question about a MOBA team composition.
Mm-hmm.
So please see your previous answer.
Actually, the King Draco 20 brought up in the chat Monsters, Inc. That actually would be a good Kingdom Hearts world. That would
be interesting.
Because you also have a villain, too. You have Randall, can turn invisible, things like that. I think that's a good world for it. But that's another Pixar, never mind. That keeps falling into that Pixar like thing of, I just assume they don't have the rights to use those.
I would like to see Wreck-It Ralph.
Okay. Wreck-It Ralph.
Next question is from a guy from Germany.
Very good.
You know, the country that invented mustard, P.S., honey mustard. When do you get a P.O. box? Because the second you guys do, I will send Chris the best honey mustard he will ever eat.
I've done some, I don't know if you would call it preliminary work into looking into what it takes to get a P.O. box. It's not really difficult.
Doesn't take very much. I've gotten a P.O. box before.
It's just expensive from what I've seen, so it's a case of trying to determine whether or not it's going to be worth it to get a P.O. box. And then the issue is also, like, if you send something in, me and Nick live very far away from each other. So it's, you know, if you're sending something in for the both of us, the issue is then I'd like have to send it down to Nick, or if Nick got the P.O. box, vice versa, sort of thing, so... There are little logistics in it to kind of work out, but I am not opposed to the idea of getting a P.O. box. I just don't know quite yet if it would be worth the hassle of doing so.
All right. Next up.
Another question here. Dear Rollo T, I love you playing Fallout 4, and I was watching Team 4-Star Fallout 4 play through and wonder who would win the fight between Captain Richard Ravager III or Punchy Jackson. The reason why is they both have a lot in common, like you both use the power fist and punch first, ask questions later, and you both gave your wedding rings to your female companions. I will note, the only reason I gave my wedding ring to Kate is because I hated her, and I just wanted to see if she'd say anything so I could punch her in response, and she didn't. I think I still punched her anyway, but I don't honestly know much about Captain Richard Ravager III, so I can't say much, but I do know that I had about 60 Psycho Buffs still in my inventory, so I could drug myself up pretty hard and make Punchy Jackson pretty crazy. There you go.
All right.
Next question.
Next up is from Jack LeBron. What's up, Rollo? Would you like a cup of tea, Governor? And why are we here? What's our purpose in life? Is nothing but the broken dreams of a dead god. Wait, what was I talking about again? Ruler of Time. Is life nothing but the broken dreams about it? I'm not sure if you've been asked this question before, if I accidentally asked it in an earlier Q&A session, but regarding One Punch Man, the main thing I always find amazing about the series is not just that the animation of the anime or the art in the manga, but its humble and surreal origins as a crappily drawn webcomic from a few years ago, and now it has evolved into one of the most popular anime of 2015. It was technically make One Punch Man the first ever webcomic-based anime. And in that regard, which one of your favorite webcomics would you like to see get the One Punch Man treatment, i.e. going from webcomic to real comic to animated series? And no, you can't use Axe Cop because that thing's popularity is based purely on randomness instead of actual writing, quality writing. Or
I don't even know what Axe Cop is, but I feel both of our answers will be Order of the Stick.
Yes. Because Order of the Stick is fucking phenomenal.
It's great.
Yeah. Would make an actually, you know, awesome series. By the way, One Punch Man, if you were going based on it was something that was available exclusively online and they got turned into an anime, it's not actually the first one ever. Well, because there are the manga that are released exclusively digitally, so that would technically make them webcomics. And, that's the other one. It's not my fault that I'm not popular. It's exclusively online, and that came before One Punch Man is an anime. So, in terms of, like, it was released by just some guy online, and then it was eventually turned into an official manga, and then turned into an anime, I don't know about that. I can't remember exactly what... Actually, we're going to check this out. One Punch Man manga...
Well, it depends, because there's a One Punch Man manga that wasn't drawn by Morita. That was drawn by someone else.
It was a webcomic in 2009. I don't know how... It was one. One manga artist, just some freezer, is One Punch Man, which was remade by Yusuke Murata. Serialized One Punch Man on his own website under no official publisher. So if you were talking in terms of specifically, you know, there's no official publisher for the webcomic, yeah, you're probably right about One Punch Man being the first one ever. But in terms of, like, stuff that was distributed online and then got turned into an anime, yeah, there's been stuff before it. But yeah, Order of the Stick. And just in case I did ask this already, has there ever been an example of a lesbian or gay romance being introduced into a manga that turned into a beautiful, respectful, and not at all perverted relationship? We've covered a few of those.
Yeah. Even just earlier, I mentioned Zabuza and Haku. If you're looking for a more, like, in the series we've covered sort of range, yeah. That's one of the few that I think was handled perfectly the entire way through. Mm-hmm. All right. Dear, why ruler of Pokemon and Digimon T? I love it when you talk about fairy tale fan service. I wonder, what is the creepiest or weirdest fan service moment in fairy tale?
If you gotta choose just one?
I don't know how to actually answer this because, I mean, there's a lot that are odd, and there might be even more that I just don't even recognize are fetishes that he's hit on. The weird thing is he hits on a lot of different fetishes, and I guess the weirdest or creepiest one would maybe just be the one that, you know, skeeves you out the most. I always find his moments where he's like, I demand a female character get naked and prostrate herself before me to be the oddest ones. Like, Evergreen did that to Urza in the Fighting Festival arc, and it's just such a bizarre moment when even the more we found out about Evergreen's character, I don't understand why she would say that. Like, I don't understand why she would demand it at that point.
Okay. Yeah. My ones that I think are the creepiest are any that involve Wendy.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that actually is probably the right answer.
Even ones that involve like, Carla or whatever. Sure. Even those are less creepy than ones involving Wendy. Hey there, why would kick my ass at card games, Ruler of Time, and Rolo, I could probably beat in a Shokugeki T.
Why am I the one who loses?
This is from Jonah Bacon Lefkowitz, or Dr. Nova, as he's known in Rolo T's forum. Love the episode as always, really enjoyed the bonus pod. I have a question and recommendation for you guys. Let's start with a question. While manga artists have a lot of creative freedom, it often feels like the popularity of certain characters will cause their roles in the story to either increase or decrease based on what the fans want. For positive examples, some people think that Law's role in One Piece was increased because he was the most popular supernova who wasn't in the Straw Hats. For a negative example, it seems like Kurokipa's role in Food Wars has decreased significantly ever since he didn't manage to break the top 10 at the popularity poll. Can you guys think of examples where a character's popularity has affected their role in the series, both positively and negatively, keeping in mind that I think Sasuke goes without saying?
To some regard, I don't actually think Law's increased role actually has to do with his popularity. It seems like Oda has put enough clues out there that I think he intended this for Law from the very beginning, and I have to imagine when he came up with designs, he was like, you know, probably his editor was like, this one's going to be really popular with fangirls. This one should probably be used for the character to do a lot with. Because do remember, when in that whole big Supernova introduction arc, Law and Kid are the ones who fight alongside Luffy at one point in time. And I feel that's very indicative of the fact that those are probably going to be the two most predominant members of the Supernovas to have a role in the story. So, I think the easiest one I could kind of name, though, would be Hitsugaya in Bleach. That was a character who became absurdly popular, and because of it, he got his own movie.
Yeah, I mean, I like Hitsugaya well enough, but I do think that he's been blown out of proportion because of the fandom that he had. You know, he keeps on getting these, like, important, prominent positions, and then doesn't really do much because he wasn't intended to be a super important character from the beginning. So it's just kind of like he gets this big build-up and then he fails, as opposed to he just, you know, fails at a normal capacity.
Mm-hmm. It is difficult, and it's an unfortunate matter any time something artistic is made into an industry, that the fact that business will determine factors of that creative element going forward. So the fact that when characters do establish the fact that they are popular, you are, as a creator, going to be encouraged to emphasize that element more. Then if somebody says Chopper's really cute, I love this character, and the brains behind it see it, they're like, all right, well, why don't you do more with Chopper so we can make more merchandise, or we can get more people excited about it. You know, it exists in that way. And in one way, it is unfortunate because it is something that changes the creative process purely on generally a business-related decision, but it isn't always necessarily negative because sometimes you can do cool things with that. It's unfortunate because when something we like isn't popular, then it does, suffer ultimately because it doesn't get that focus anymore. You know, Nova mentions Kurokiba in his example. I'm sure that characters like Chad and Elfman, characters that I liked in other series, didn't prove to be insanely popular. Maybe that's why they don't get as much focus as they used to anymore either. So,
By the way, you mentioned Kurokiba. A little bit of spoiler. Kurokiba is going to have a prominent role in a couple of chapters.
That's cool.
I think that his fading into the background is more a consequence of what we mentioned earlier with Food Wars, which is just a lot of secondary characters fade back. So,
I can see why it's an issue, but at the same time, you know, it's somewhat necessary from the fact that the only reason we have manga is because people find it popular and it makes money.
All right.
Next question. Yes. This is from Mr. Ginger. Hey, Nick, the Prince of Pop-Tarts, and Chris, the Harbinger of Honey Mustard. I've got two new questions and a couple of resents. So I think some of these we'll be ignoring, since if they're resents, we just got to them probably.
Right.
If you were to give a Food Wars-esque mantra to Infamous Planet, what would it be? My personal one would be the Monarch of McDonald's. I don't think he'd have one. His would be like, Infamous Planet, I can't be bothered, and he wouldn't even be in the school. Like, Nick and myself aren't good chefs, but we have our own thing. Infamous would just be like, it would either be, I couldn't be bothered to send in my application, or this other one would be, I spent $400 on astronaut food. Like, but his thing is like, I overpay for shitty food, I guess.
Oh, God.
Two, have you ever thought of doing double guest hosts for our especially big episodes of WMR? I know it sounds like a lot, but it'd be interesting to see. For example, when you get to Berserk, I think it'd be enjoyable to have both Benzai and either J.O. or Sage on, since they are both big fans of the anime. It's not something I'm against or anything like that. I'm trying to make it so guests are more, I guess, regular thing on the show, but maybe we will come up against something that it's worth having two guests on, or it works just right, or, you know, the time works for it, whatever it is.
Yeah, we'll see.
Third question. I've been struggling with the question of print versus digital purchases. I love collecting manga volumes and putting them on my shelf for myself and others to look at, but at the same time, I realize space is limited. I regularly collect physical volumes of the series I really enjoy, but it's getting daunting to collect so many physically, and I really hate to break a collection when I switch to digital. So my question is, what does your physical manga collection consist of, and how do you determine whether to buy the volumes, print, or in digital?
Well, I only recently got physical manga on purpose at all. Like, before it was just, like, stuff people gave me. So I've got, you know, a couple volumes of actually Aonor Exorcist. I've got a couple volumes of Bleach here and there. But I only, on purpose, got every physical volume of World Trigger recently. Mm-hmm. So that's like the beginning of my deliberate physical manga collection. So in terms of that, I'm kind of a newbie to it. So mostly I'd just be like, just get digital.
I get digital generally right now, mainly just because I'm getting older now and I recognize, like, look, you know, I'm not going to have a lot of space for this stuff, and as fun as collecting manga was when I was a kid, it's just very cumbersome. Like, I have boxes of manga in my basement that I don't really have much, like, of a place to put and things like that. Like, I can just see it's become clutter. So I think digital helps in making things kind of clean and easy. The issue, and I completely relate to you in having an issue with breaking a collection, because I own, I think, 46 volumes of One Piece physical. Mm-hmm. I've owned up through, I think, like, the Thriller Arc Bark. Thriller Bark Arc. There it is. I own through that, and I haven't picked up a volume yet because basically there was that big speed up they did a while back where they caught up with, or got very close to where the Japanese releases were, and they got through like 30 volumes in like a year. It was absurd. They went through a lot really quickly. And I very much appreciate that. It just became too hard for me to purchase them at that point, because it used to be like, hey, a volume came out every 2 to 3 months or something like that. That was very manageable. So I fell behind, and now I'm collecting, I collect World Trigger and Food Wars and JoJo, things like that. I'm collecting through digital now, and whenever they make Eye Shield available, I'm definitely going to collect that. But for One Piece, I'm at a tough crossroads. It's like, I own 40 volumes of it, plus, physically. And to buy those again, digitally, to own a full collection digitally, so I could read the more recent series, you know, more recent arcs, would just be, I mean, essentially be like paying, like, $300 for something I already own. And I have such a difficulty, like, making the financial decision to do that. So it is definitely a very difficult thing to do. But I think ultimately I enjoy having series digitally more now. I know the feeling of having something collected and being able to look at it on a shelf and thinking, it, you know, seeing it looks cool. But digital is just exceptionally more practical. Being able to have it, you know, essentially anywhere, either on your phone or your device or anything like that, is just really helpful, not having to be clutter. Not having to move it, too. If you ever move and have to carry manga volumes, especially the ones you don't read anymore, you get really annoyed with yourself. Four. If you get one manga artist to draw a portrait of you, who would it be, and what would the picture look like, / what would you be doing in the picture?
I would say Murata. And I would be staring.
Staring?
Mm-hmm.
Intensely staring, or just staring, like, into space? Like diving the stove on?
Intensely.
Okay. Urasawa, I think, would be really awesome to get an image of, because I think he's always been very good at drawing human faces, and, like, mm-hmm. if he draws me, like, you know, in front of a mic doing podcasting or doing stand-up or something like that, like, I feel like he's good at capturing that passion people have for their jobs. So I think he'd be kind of cool, but it's hard not to be like, oh, I want, you know, Oda or Horikoshi to do it. I think I'd probably go with Urasawa, though.
Part 5 of 5.
Sorry, and as Bleach has been going on, I can see only one possible ending for the manga, and that is Ichigo will become the leader of the 13 Court Guard Squad. Thinking about it makes sense. Ichigo is already the strongest character in Bleach, and the current leader, Shunsui, apparently dislikes responsibility. Do you guys think this is how Bleach will end? How do you think it will end?
No, it's not going to end that way.
And it's weird that people say Ichigo is, like, the strongest, and I recognize he is supposed to be one of the stronger characters in it, but I'm always like, he has no power. Like, his sword makes him really fast. And
he just got his ass kicked by Escanaclevar.
Yeah, and I'm like, in a world where people are like, oh, my power makes me immune to being killed, or the more I get killed, the stronger I get, or things like obtuse things like that, it's hard to recognize that Ichigo being really fast is that important.
I keep on seeing these ideas of, you know, the future, like, oh, Ichigo will, like, will become a captain and he'll marry Rukia or something like that. And it's like, no, I don't see that happening, because Ichigo's whole thing is, you know, protecting the people close to him. So why would he, you know, go somewhere away from, you know, Karakura Town, where all the people that he really cares about protecting, you know, are, in order to look over, you know, a society that, you know, he was not born in and he has no real connection to, save for the friends that he has there. So I really don't think that Ichigo is going to end up joining the Court Guards. I think that he'll just, you know, remain substitute Soul Reaper, but just with a really close connection to the Soul Society by the end of things. I don't see him actually joining up with them.
I just want that.
Okay. Alright, next up, from Phil. This is a little hard to see because there's no paragraph breaks. Okay. Last time I sent a manga recommendation list, this time I have a series of questions to ask. Your choice if you want to answer.
No. Okay, next
email. One, if you gain the ability to make your own manga with minimum effort and it is somehow approved to be published in Weekly Shonen Jump, no matter how sexual, violent, or bad it would be.
That seems like such a weird condition. Like, it can suck super hard. It gets published anyway.
What would the art look like? What would the characters be? What would the story be? What would the length be? I guess, essentially, what would our manga be like if we get it published? Which we've answered, I think, questions to this manner before, but it's been a while.
I would want to make my my MOBA manga, like, from my Shonen Top 10 Sports series that need a manga. I'd do the MOBA manga, put that in there. And I think that would be a fun series.
I have a football manga in mind. Have some Yu-Gi-Oh! Stories sitting inside my brain somewhere. came up with a couple of action series at different points. Yeah, there's a number of different ideas that I could put to page if I, you know, could only be bothered and could learn to draw. Two, if all the main protagonists from the shonen mangas you guys are viewing were to suddenly swap weapons and tools or abilities and
Jesus
skill,
Jesus H. Christ. Can I use my veto on this question?
Oh, God. And there's this long list. And we're at the end of the episode. We can't do this.
Yeah, I'm going to say we'll veto. You said it's our choice. If we want to answer, I don't want to answer this one. Not because it's a bad question. It's just because it's going to take too much time and thought to get into.
Let's see here. Pick three characters from manga and give them a teacher or mentor to teach or pass a skill on to them. Okay. Okay, yeah. So, alright. I see. So, this list has like, oh, you know, Osamu could get his potential released by Elder Kai from Dragon Ball Z. Aster could learn Skywalk and Fire from Sanji.
That seems like an odd one.
Oh, and Soma will learn Food Honor from Chin-Chin-Chin.
Chin-Chin-Chin.
Thank you.
I would say, I think it'd be cool if Osamu got to be mentored by Garp from One Piece, because he turned Kobe and Halempo, who were complete nudniks at the start, into extremely awesome characters, and I think he could do the exact same thing with somebody who wants to work just as hard. I'm trying to think who else is like a good mentor and a protege candidate. I guess Master Roshi teach Sanji some sexy techniques. I don't know. That's I came up with one.
You just gotta sneak into the drawer and steal the panties.
I don't know. Maybe have Haruma mentor Soma on being devilish. I don't know. I really don't know. I came up with one.
A weird pairing there. I kind of want. Let me see. What would be appropriate for that? I kind of want to see the Masters of Ryozanpaku mentor Deku. I don't know, Ryozanpaku from History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Because Deku basically has a very similar learning style to Kenichi, which is killing himself until he gets good. But having that in a controlled environment as opposed to him punching stuff and breaking his arms until he gets better at punching stuff would probably be good for him.
Alright. Want to wrap it up with just like one or two more?
Yeah.
Alright. Question here from Satellite of Love. Dear Chris, Nick, and Rollo T. First, I agree with you, Nick. Crossmanage and Freezing are very similar to each other. Secondly, question. Who would win in an all-out free-for-all battle between the high-ranking military-ish commanders of each series? Fuego Leon from Black Clover, Captain Yamamoto from Bleach, Ikano from World Trigger, or One Piece, General Shinoda from World Trigger, Makarov Fairy Tail, and I guess the hamster principal from Hero Academy, and whoever would fill the void from Toriko. And I couldn't think of anyone appropriate from Food Wars, so fuck it, Megumi.
Just because you say that, Megumi wins.
Yeah, I mean, to actually put thought into it, it's tough to determine, because whenever a Logia user goes against something from other series, I'm like, do they have a method to stop the fact that attacks that aren't his natural counter just go through him? Because if not, then he would win.
And we've established that the Akiinu counters fire, so even if Yamamoto weren't the super incompetent commander, then he would definitely lose that.
Yeah, I guess I'll go with Ikano on the idea being that others don't have haki, so they can't just counter him that way.
Right. Fuego Leon and Yamamoto get countered by Akiinu, and then the other guys, I think, are just weaker than him in general. Mm-hmm. Like, Shinoda is cool, but not nearly on that level. And, you know, Makarov would get really big, punch something, and then get knocked out.
So. Try to punch Megumi, then get knocked out.
So, yeah, the problem is, this is like, you know, just in terms of pure power scale, yeah, we're talking, like, yeah, Akiinu would, you know, ace them. And, you know, he is an admiral. I'm sure that his, you know, strategic and military commanding ability are at least on par with everyone else's. Certainly better than Yamamoto's and Makarov's. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually a pretty easy answer. Also, they say Hugh's safe for Straw Hats. Yes. So the satellite has said that on the last couple of minutes. All right. So I guess we'll wrap up with this one then.
Yes.
From Tropical. Oh, it's a fairly long one, too. Okay. All right. Hello, Chris. Autobots roll out. Larios and Nick. Why are rulers such terrible measuring sticks for time? That's good. During the last Q&A, Gelly Elfson asked about you guys reviewing manga that you would have to buy volumes for since they wouldn't be readily available online, such as the Ace Attorney series. You guys mentioned that you would be open to the idea of taking a recommendation for those, but what is the limit to the number of volumes you are able to read? Do you make a blank rule of reading a few volumes of any series you need to buy physical copies of, or do you avoid manga with a lot of volumes to them? I think that should be a fairly obvious answer after we mentioned spending money on manga we actually know we like.
If it's a series, it's like it's only available in a print version, and it has like 38 volumes, probably not going to touch it.
Fuck off.
Unless you're like, I have those volumes and I'll give them to you to read.
Really?
Yeah.
Once we get that P.O. box open.
Yeah, it's full of honey mustard and shit.
Okay. And then this one might relate more to Nick, but Chris can answer if you played those games as well. Have you ever played any of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Games which deviate from the standardized game rules? I'm talking about games such as Yu-Gi-Oh! Castle Monster Coliseum, or the Duelist of the Roses, Forbidden Memories, the Falsebound Kingdom, or the Yu-Gi-Oh! Tag Force series of games. What do you think of them, and how do you rank them with the games that do adhere to the standard rules, such as Nightmare Troubadour, Dark Duel Stories, or Chef of Destruction, Dawn of Destiny, etc.? I remember the games that tended to deviate from the rules, and I was like, what the fuck is this bullshit? How can this mystical elf beat a summoned skull, or however the fuck the type advantages in those games worked? But yeah, they had, like, you know, automatic win, basically, relationships between the monster types in those games, and they weren't the same as the monster types in the regular games, so it was very confusing. It was stupid.
I think Falsebound Kingdom I played, if it's the one I'm remembering. I played one on the GameCube that was essentially like a turn-based RPG mixed with an RTS. Basically, you had a duelist, and then they'd have three monsters under them, and you'd send them out onto the field at locations, and whenever they ran into another person, then you would go into like a turn-based fight against one another, like back and forth. And that was kind of like that was a decent game. I remember playing through it. But I also remember playing a game on the Game Boy Advance, or no, it might have been the original Game Boy, actually, that was a Yu-Gi-Oh! Game, and it had the cards in it, but it had weird fucked up cards that didn't follow the rules, and I forget, there was one card that was absurdly more powerful than it normally ever would be. I cannot remember its name. It's from, like, the base class of cards. I want to think it's, like, Yamamoto General of Darkness or something like that. And it's, in the regular game, it sucks. It's like a 2,000 attack, 5-star bullshit monster, no effect. They lowered it to 4-star in that game, so you could play it naturally.
2,000 attack, 4-star monster, yeah.
So you just fucking, every deck had to have it. You were like, just throw this down, this thing's gonna beat anything else that you play. And it was absurdly broken. That game sucked, though. I hated the shit out of it.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Yamato.
It was like that, or Demon of Darkness, or something like that. I cannot remember the name.
Yami Makai?
Let me see. Yami Makai.
King of Yami Makai is the one that I'm thinking of.
King of Yami Makai? It might be that. Yeah, that was it. That was awesome. It. They lowered it to a 4-star in the game, so it was 2,1530 that was 4-star and you could play. It was
cool.
Weird. And I think Falsebound Kingdom was the game I was thinking of. I know my friend Frank had Duelist of the Roses, where they just did the story of War of the Roses with Yu-Gi-Oh! Characters.
I haven't played too many of the games where they really deviate heavily from the rule sets. I always preferred seeking out the ones that actually stuck to the rules, because I liked having, a Yu-Gi-Oh! Simulator game that I could just play by myself. Because, you know, I've always had people that are willing to play Yu-Gi-Oh! With me, just not, you know, over and over and over and over and over and over again, the way you can with a video game like that. I've never played the Tag Force games, but from what I understand of them, they actually do adhere relatively close to the rules, but there's, like, a mechanic, I believe that this is the case. I think this is the series that they get. For one thing, like, they add card. They added cards that aren't actually available in the official game. So, like, you know, cards that are, like, showed up in the anime but never got officially released and stuff, which is cool. And I, I believe they also added an element of, you know, the god draw, where, you know, like, if you were in a really tense situation, you could just trigger an ability once per duel, so it'll allow you to add one of, like, a pre-selected number of cards to your hand for your next draw. So, like, oh, I really need to get, you know, my ace monster in order to win, that you could trigger if you were in a tight situation, tight spot, which I thought was cool. I can't remember if that's the Tag Force games. I do know that there was somebody game that did that. Then we get a question. We got a suggestion for a potential future guest. Thank you for that. We'll keep that in mind. Now for the really strange questions. This question is for Nick, since it's related to his answer to the last Q&A, where he, when you said that if you were to end up becoming Raku or have his body and end his stupid harem by ending up with Sugumi, did you say that because you think it would be the best for everyone involved in the story, or is it because you, having become a 16-year-old teenager in a very idealistically perfect Japanese high school, would rather date Sugumi? Remember, you are not Nick anymore in the second scenario, but you're Raku.
Wait, what? I got lost in that one. That was like an algebra question. It's for you, though, right?
The question was, if you were to end up becoming Raku, who would you choose to end up with out of the harem? And I said, oh. That was because I just like Scooby the best out of girls. If I were to actually become Raku, Raku would not choose Sugumi, because he's not in love with her. He's in love with Onodera and Shitoge.
But I guess it's like, what if it's like a Freaky Friday situation where you've gone into his body, but it's not like Freaky Friday and the idea that you could ever get back. You're just now going to be Raku.
I would definitely go with Sugumi then.
Okay.
Because she's my favorite. And,
yeah.
And it's, it doesn't matter anyway, because all the girls who are in Raku's harem like him. So... This one is for Chris, but Nick can answer it as well if he wants to. Now, imagine that you are sitting at home listening to a YouTube video that says that scientists have not only discovered that extraterrestrials exist, but that a human who consumes part of said alien life form leads to said human being able to live longer and maintain shape. Being in shape for a long period of time without any side effects at all. Just then, you hear a sound outside your window in the dead of night. When you look outside, there's a spaceship that seemingly crash-landed. From it, there's a body of an alien that is protruding from one of its windows. You cannot tell if it is alive, but unconscious, or dead due to the crash landing. All you know is one thing for sure. This isn't cannibalism, because that alien is not human. Also, you aren't going to eat it because you are hungry, but to stay healthy and in good shape. Now, how would you proceed to eat the alien?
It's not a question of would I eat this alien. Morally, is it okay?
Because yes. do you eat her/it/him raw, or do you try and go all Toriko and put some honey mustard on it? And yes, the alien is going to taste out of this world, regardless of what you do.
At first, I thought this was a reference to a hypothetical I posed on the episode of Transmission Awesome with Lin Carr, where it was like, you can have an alien parasite within you that keeps your body in whatever shape you want it to, but every so often it takes control of your voice and just screams racial epithets at people. because it seems to do the same thing. Alien parasite that makes me always look hot, look like Chris Evans. I guess I'd put honey mustard on it. Like, yeah. You know. Well, why not combine two good better, things together? Yeah.
Okay, that was easy. It just took us a while to get there. All right, yeah, that is going to do it for our Q&A. We're just under a month behind in terms of our Q&A backlog, so I think we actually did make quite a bit of progress. We covered about a month and a half worth of questions this time.
Yes, we're deep into January now.
So yeah, thank you guys for sending all that stuff in, even the ones where we kind of shit on you for making it, like, this would take so long to answer. But no, we do appreciate it. So please keep on sending those questions in, so we'll have more to talk about next time. Although probably the amount that's sitting in our questions folder will probably be enough to last us through the next episode, but send them in anyway. And yeah, we've enjoyed doing this Q&A episode. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, because you allow us to do bonus content like this. I don't know what we're going to do next in in terms of our bonus stuff. Maybe our movie commented.
Possibly, yeah. Want to come up.
Yeah, keep an eye on Twitter for updates on that stuff. He is at RollerT, I'm at YRollerTime, and we are at the BMR Podcast.
Yes, so that's going to do it, everybody.
Yeah.
I hope everybody has a fantastic... No, this is the episode sign-off. Mm-hmm. I don't know, we need something wacky to go out on, or what?
Mm.
You know what? Here, I'll just pose this. For a hot moment, I wanted to put... Because I pose a question to the chat about which character you want to... Like, I want to... Whenever we do the Q&A, I pose a question to the chat to ask them a question as well, essentially. And this time I did the, you know, which leading lady would you like to have a Valentine's Day with? I contemplated briefly for a moment putting the other opposite, which series is the best to jerk off to when you're alone on Valentine's Day? And I was like, you know what I don't want to know? I don't want to know which series most of our audience masturbates to. And I feel like I made a very good decision with that, Nick.
Oh, and I would be very concerned if it ended up being like, I'd be very concerned if it were World Trigger, honestly.
No, I know that one. Actually, I'd not be surprised by that at all, because I know Brawla is a person voting, and I know that she has, like, that series has, like, 90% of her shipping options in it. Our official lesbian consultant, that series would have a whole lot. I know she's all over that.
Yeah, but it's not a fan servicey one, and a lot of them are...
No, but she doesn't need it. She just needs the character. She just needs to see it, and then she can get the external, you know, the extracurricular materials, as it were.
I was going to start that by saying, I hope they don't jerk off to My Hero Academy. And then I was like, oh no, there was that Hot Springs episode. And then there was the one... God damn it, there are actually a fair number of fan service moments in this series. Fuck.
I think Toriko would be the one that would really concern me. I'm like...
We could have, you know, male gay people in our...
No, I'm not saying that's the issue. There's just no fan service in the series, and it's weird as shit. Like, I don't know where they'd get it if they were just like, that chapter where they all got tits was so hot.
God, that food is hot.
Oh, I can't wait to have that soup.